Welcome back, Inebriates. I apologize if I sound a little off today. I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, but I was reached out by a PR agent earlier, I think this week, maybe last week, and immediately was I just felt old. So today I'm joined by Greg Workman. Congratulations on 25 years of Ipecac Records.
Thank you very much.
That's amazing. I remember I've been a big Mike Patton fan pretty much all my life. And it just, when I saw 25 years, I'm like, oh man, really? How did it all
So do
come?
I.
How did it all come about? And 25 years for an indie record label, I feel, is like, it's huge.
It hasn't seemed like much, but I say that, but we never really started it. To be a real record label. We honestly didn't. We Mike my partner Mike Patton was on the road with his band Faith No More and was making all this weird music in his hotel room, just him and a recorder. And I remember he came home from one tour and he says, oh, I've got some weird a couple weird things I've been working on. What do you think? And I thought, hey, look, they sound pretty cool. And he already had a pretty good following. So I was like, yeah, we should put it out. The funny thing is, though, he was under contract with Warner Brothers. So to put anything out, we had to get Warner Brothers approval. And I'll never forget, it was one of my greatest memories of mine in the music industry. I had to sit in a meeting with the president of Warner Brothers. And who's a very, very nice guy, and play him a tape of what would go on to become the first Fantomas record, which was the first release. And I want to say he made it through 20 seconds, but that might be generous. He stopped the tape and said, Greg, I don't know what this is exactly, but you're free to do whatever you want with this. And thus the label is off and running, I guess.
That's I love that. That is so on brand for us as well. Like everyone's always like, oh, how'd you come up with this? I'm like, oh, it was an accident. Like almost everything we do is someone be like, hey, you guys should try doing such and such. And we're like, I mean, okay, let's give that a try. And some of it works great and some of it doesn't. And you, the stuff that doesn't, you pretend like it never existed. The stuff that works great, you're like, yeah, we thought of that.
Well, that's the beauty of art in general, though, isn't it?
Oh, for sure.
So much of it's not planned out, I have a feeling the great painters of the universe often sit down and look at a blank canvas and then just get inspired. So, yeah, I think maybe that's what has worked in our benefit. We didn't plan to be a, I don't know what the word is, a commercial product unit a purveyor. We just wanted to have a place where Mike could put out some of his weird stuff that he's working on. Shortly after that, so he had two projects. He had the first Fantomas and a record called Maldoror of that he was trading tapes with the Japanese noise guy Mertzbau, and that's Maldoror. And once we started following up a little bit with those two projects, Buzz Osborne, who's in the Melvins and what part of Fantomas, he pointed out, well, if you guys really are going to be an outlet for music, the Melvins don't really have a deal with any record label. We'd be happy to put stuff out. And I think that really was the turning point because then when you have an active working band with the integrity and success that the Melvins have, then it's real. At least for me, it felt
It
like.
lends like credibility, you know? That's so cool. I just love that kind of whole organic, when it feels right, it feels right kind of thing. It's just like it
That's
just kind
it.
of happens, and there's something so pure about that that I really love.
Well, lucky for us, Mike and I have never really thought about the music industry. We love music. We love movies. We love video games. We love books. And we were like, let's just put cool stuff out that we like, that we're attracted to. At the end of the day, if a million people don't jump on board, that's okay. Right. So as opposed to other, a lot of other record labels, I'm not saying we're doing anything better than anybody or worse than anybody. It's just different. We don't pay bands big advances. We don't say, here's $100,000. Let's hope we all make it back. We give a band a little money to get a record made. And we all hope that in 6 months, I'm writing royalty checks to those bands. So we've had releases that have sold, I don't know, 1,000 copies or 1,500 copies, but we don't look at those as failures. Because it's about the music. It can work on all levels, is what I'm trying to say.
I love that mentality. And one of our longest running events, we host a figure drawing group here in Plymouth where we hire a model and people pay a cover charge and they show up with whatever they want to work in and draw from the model, kind of like a college drawing class where you can have a drink and a cocktail, whatever. Yeah. And one of the hardest things is it's so niche, like the artists love it, but trying to get people who maybe like borderline who like to draw but haven't drawn from a figure before, and like and I'm like, it's not, no one comes out of there with the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, there's no romance.
You come out of there with one drawing that you think is okay, you had a great night, you know.
Yes.
And it's like, it's the process, it's you know, even the masters, like now that they can like x-ray their paintings, they're like, oh, they painted over this portion or they painted over the whole thing. And it's like, yeah, even the best artists in the world make stuff they hate.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just stuff that doesn't appeal to someone, maybe only them sitting in their bedroom or their art gallery can look at it and really appreciate it, but it still means something.
That's like every joke I make. I'm always like, I didn't do it to make you laugh. I did it to make me laugh.
Yeah. Like, that's a good way to live.
Yeah. So now looking back at 25 years, which still blows my mind, I think the first time I heard Ipecac was from my college roommate when I was in art school. So it was like 93. What year did you guys start?
It couldn't be 93. No, we started in 99.
Okay, maybe it was after that. Okay, so if you guys started in 99, what the hell was I listening to in 93?
Probably Mr. Bond, maybe, or something.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. That's what it was. And then from there, like all of other Mike's projects. But so when did it feel like, or does it even still feel like a bit like, did it make that turning point where you're like, this is my career now, opposed to this is just something I'm doing with my friend?
No, it doesn't feel like a career. And I guess that's what makes a successful job, when it doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for me, I am the one that has to deal with the job part of things. So I have to deal with lawyers and managers and the things that do feel job-like. But at the end of the day, it's for us, it's always about the artists. Yeah. And I serve the artists that we work for. And working with creatives, as you know, is never a dull day. It's not always easy. Some people think, wow, it must be so fun. There are fun parts of it, but creatives are also a roller coaster.
Yeah, for sure.
And but I wouldn't trade it in for anything. You know, there are times where I've been like, wow, am I really 60 or 50 years old or whatever and doing this weird stuff? But at the end of the day, it's the people I work with really keep me going and keep it feeling fresh and interesting and creative. I'll tell you this. I'm glad we don't have, some people have said to me, has it hurt you that you don't have an image or a sound for your record label? And I think it's the opposite. I think it's helped us. I think if we were putting out the same sounding type of music every year in and year out, I would be bored to death. People ask Patton that all the time. Like, you have so many projects. That's crazy. And he always says, without even thinking, it's like, I think it's crazy. And I don't understand those artists that sing the same songs over and over every year on every tour for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, he could never be Gene Simmons. songs, you know, singing those same songs every year. Anyway, so I guess, like I said, it's no right or wrong, but
I totally get that, because it's like I'm the happiest when I have like 9 things going on, because if I get bored with one, I jump to something else. And, you know, anytime I kind of feel like stuck in a rut, I'll just change my medium or the style of what I'm doing to kind of just change things up. And it's, you know, to me, I didn't grow up, you know, I'm still playing, you know, and that's the fun part. Like, if it gets repetitious, you just do something different and go in a completely different direction.
It's true. Just don't grow up. That's exactly what I feel. I'm turning 60 years old this year, and it seems so strange to me because that number seems huge. And when I got into music when I was really young, a 60-year-old person was a boring person that listened to Perry Como and Barbara Streisand and was very vanilla. And my life is very not vanilla at all. And so, yeah, I don't put much merit into age, or numbers or things like that.
That's something I'm struggling with myself. This past January, I had a fairly hefty bout of depression. I turned 49, and that was the first time I'm like, woof, next year I'm 50. That's like, that's like a real adult.
Yes.
And, you know, I have such a strange job that it's interesting when you work in a creative field that's definitely off center. People will ask you things that are, you would never ask a normal person. I ran into someone that I used to work with retail years ago, and they're like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I just do an EBR now. Ugh, do you make enough money doing that? It's like,
yeah, yes.
You would never ask a landscaper that.
Or what's your real job then?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you pay the bills?
Yeah. And my answer was like, do I look like I'm starving? I definitely don't look like I'm starving.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you have a hard time kind of connecting with people your same age? Like, I feel a lot of the people I hang around with are younger than me, because they're the ones who still want to go out, the ones who want to go see live bands, they're the ones who want to go see a comedy show.
Yes.
And it's more just because those are the people I'm around. But I feel like at a certain age, they're just like, oh, I like to stay home. And I'm like, ugh, that sounds so dull.
Oh, absolutely. Especially I don't know about you, but I'm single. And as a single person, yes, definitely. Because now if I'm 59 years old and I'm out there looking to meet women in their 50s, you just got to find your people, though. You know, I spend a lot of time in record stores. I just love, those are my people. They feel a little not so concerned with a lot of really important things, but they love music, or bookstores. I love hanging out in bookstores too. So yeah, I guess you just try to find your people.
Yeah, I definitely feel I am single. And it is definitely that kind of, you know, women my same age, I feel like, and I'm super pigeonholing women, so I apologize to anyone who's listening. In my experience, the women I've dated are very much like, oh, I like to work and then go home and sit in front of the TV. And I'm like, it just sounds like torture to me.
You know?
There's only so many times you can watch The Big Bang Theory before you're just like, I'm done.
Yeah, but conversely, well, I'm not going to speak for you, obviously, but conversely for me, I also, you know, I spent decades, or it feels like, you know, up front with my hands or my arms on the stage at a Ramones concert and getting sucked into the pit. And so, yeah, I can't do that either, but there's a happy medium.
Yeah, I destroyed my knees like, it was probably about two and a half years ago, like bad. And I'm just like, well, I can never go in a pit ever again, because they'll take me out in a stretcher. So, which is sad, but kind of like in the same point, you know, don't really want to be the 50-year-old guy in the pit either. You know?
No, it's not a good look.
So it's funny. I looked you up on Wikipedia to kind of see what else you've done. And I'm not on Wikipedia, so congratulations. But it literally just lists you as businessman, musician, and it said you and Mike bonded over basketball and video games. And I'm like, God, that just seems like such a. There has to be more, but the thing that struck me was video games, because we just started running retro video game nights.
Oh yeah,
bringing like systems to different bars and stuff. What is it about our generation that is just?
I don't know, but Mike and I can't even count the hours where we either were playing, Grand Theft Auto or a Mario Brothers game or NHL 95. I don't know. And yeah, I guess so. There's a nerd quality in there, but that's okay. I embrace that. I personally, even more than Mike, I've had, I think, every video game system maybe ever made up until like the last 10 years when I settled with just my Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
But my parents bought us, me and my brothers, Pong. So we had the original Pong game, which was, just two paddles. And
sure, yeah.
Went from there to Intellivision.
I wanted Intellivision so bad.
We were the cool kids. We were the only ones that had Intellivision. I have to admit, we didn't have a lot of money, but for whatever reason, my parents embraced our love of video games.
Because I had an Atari 2600. Was that Intellivision was the one that had like the keypad with the different,
or
was
you
that
slide in?
Yeah. Because I'm a big D&D nerd, and Intellivision had Dungeons and Dragons games.
Had the best Dungeons and Dragons, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like obsessed. Yeah. I always went over I need to go over to my friend's house because he's got Intellivision, and we would just play for hours.
But Mike and I would just literally, we would order pizzas and just play. And then we were both, I grew up in Indiana, and I have four brothers, so we had a basketball team, the five of us.
Yeah.
So basketball was, in my blood. I am not as into basketball now. I'm still insanely into hockey, but not basketball as much. But Mike, oh my God.
Yeah.
You just mentioned the Lakers to him, especially where you're from. Oh my God, Lakers, Celtics, forget about it.
I actually went to my first Celtics game. A friend of mine works for the Celtics, and he got me some tickets. And not a basketball fan, grew up as a hockey fan. He said NHL 95. I'm like, oh my God, I love that one.
Yeah, that was the best.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. I had a great time. Like I don't really understand the sport and the strategy behind it, but it was a fun time for a basketball game. And if you're going to see the Celtics, now's the time.
Yeah. Seems like it.
Yeah. What do you foresee in the future for Ipecac? I wanted to touch base on, you said that you feel like Ipecac doesn't have a sound or a style, and it immediately made me think of Monty Python, because I want to say it was Graham Chapman did an interview, might have been John Cleese, and they said that they actively tried not to have a style, and somehow that became Monty Python style and that's kind of how I think of Ipecac. I'm like, it's that like, ooh, I don't know what I'm gonna get. That's like my expectation is the total variation. Even you brought up Mr. Bungle. I mean, every Mr. Bungle album is completely different.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of like, ooh, I wonder what this one's going to be like. And to me, that's almost the style I expect.
The anti-style style.
Yeah.
We honestly don't purposely do anything. It's just if a country swing band fall that we see at a club blows us away, an electronic, person, things just fall into, and we're just attracted to it. That is funny about Mr. Bungle, though, because recently Mr. Bungle did such a Mr. Bungle thing. When they decided to get back together, instead of doing like a reunion greatest hits concert or whatever, they decided to recreate the songs from when they were in high school, when they formed Mr. Bungle.
Yeah.
They were into thrash metal when they were kids. And so that became this era of Mr. Bungle. And with all, yes, respect to Taylor Swift, I'm using eras. but it's so funny that all these so-called diehard Mr. Bungle fans got really upset about it. Not millions of them, because there's not millions of Mr. Bungle fans, but a lot were like, that's not the Mr. Bungle I like. And like you, do you ever remember one Mr. Bungle album fitting with the next one? Like musically, stylistically? No. I mean, that is, you know, the next Mr. Bungle album, if there is another one, could be a polka album or something. So anyway.
And that's the tough thing with audiences. I saw Mr. Bungle in Boston, and it was the disco album,
Disco Volante.
Yes, I think they were supporting that, and they were playing music off of that, and the crowd was expecting, you know,
the funk.
And they were just totally not into it.
And
I don't want to project or put anything into Mike's voice or opinion, but it just seemed like he was not loving the crowd at all, because they were just interested.
He loves that. His worst nightmare is a crowd that knows every word to every song and sings along with him.
Oh, really?
That's why he got frustrated and left Faith No More for quite a while. He was doing these shows. I was there with him in Germany at a Rock and Ring show. It was pouring rain, yet there were, I don't know how many, 100,000 people in this racetrack. In Europe, Faith No More was way more popular than they are here. And they were singing along every word to every song. And at a certain point, he just turned around and he performed the rest of the show looking at the drummer. And he was just not interested in that. He does thrive with some turmoil.
That's interesting. Wow, I wouldn't expect that. That's
And that's why I remember when we got the phone call, California, the album California had just come out by Mr. Bungle. The manager for A System of a Down called and said, we're putting together this bill, and it's called the Snowcore Tour, and it's going to be us and Incubus. So System of a Down and Incubus, and the guys really want Mr. Bungle to do this. And they were big fans. And we talked, we had a band meeting, and we were like, these fans are going to hate us. And that was the first thing one of the guys said, we don't fit with System of a Down and Incubus. And then everybody else started laughing. It's like, we got to do it. that was the, that ended up being such an amazingly entertaining tour, because the fans hated Mr. Bungle. I mean, it was violent, and the band was on top of their form because they got pushed by the negative energy coming from the crowd. And those shows were pretty, pretty monumental.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And it's sometimes that I really like that idea. And to me, that was like the whole point behind the original Lollapalooza tours, was getting a bunch of bands that shouldn't be together.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the way they do it in other countries. You know, you get something for everyone. But I just did the other day, somebody was interviewing me about our 25th anniversary, and they said, you know, it's a pretty diverse discography there. Do you think maybe you've made it difficult on yourself to keep the fan base the same? And I laughed about that, because I'm like, we don't think of that, but that is true. If I meet anybody that likes every single release we've put out in 25 years, other than Mike and I, I will think they're probably either lying or they're crazy. We don't expect that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have eclectic music taste for sure, but as I've gotten older, I very much realized that it's not that it's bad music. It's just like, oh, I'm not the demographic. Like, this isn't made for me. It's okay if I don't like it.
And that's what I explain to people. It's okay, because any form of art, it speaks to people differently. You know, the exact same painting, the exact same movie, the exact same record sounds different or looks different or reads different to anyone else. That's fine. That's the beauty of it. Yeah.
And so I even get that.
Pigeonhole people is it's a really ridiculous thing.
Yeah. And I even get that negative energy aspect of it too, because you're still influencing. To me, like, the worst response would be like, oh, we played to the room and they seemed indifferent.
Yeah.
You know, like, a negative response is fine because you're like, okay, that's not the audience that this is for. A good response is great because you're like, those are my people. But like, the people are just like, I know a lot of musicians. Plymouth is a very music heavy area. And there's a, you know, we have like right down by Plymouth Rock and whatnot, there's a good stretch of these two roads about a mile long, and there's 40 bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
And most of them have music at least two nights a week. And just sometimes you're like, you know, the musician, you know, he's good at what he does, and no one in the place is paying any attention.
Yes.
Because they're just there to have dinner and whatnot. And it's just, yeah, it's like, I get it. He's getting paid and that's awesome. But it's just like, he's really good. Turn around.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool thing.
Yeah. What should I be listening to? Like, what are you listening to that is like up and coming? Or you're like, oh, I just discovered this band. Is there something?
Yeah, I'm the worst person to ask about that. My tastes change. I'm in a shoegaze phase right now. I don't know why it came back from the old days.
Yeah.
So yeah, the most recent record by Slow Dive, I'm just listening to nonstop right now. I need to actually get off that. But no, I don't know. There's no real, I really like, do you know this band Granddaddy?
I have heard of them recently.
Yeah. So it's one guy I kind of think that creates the music for the band. Anyway, they've got a new record, or not new, came out, yeah, I think last year, called Blue Wave. And it's funny because it is perfectly titled, because it's partially bluegrass music and partially new wave music. It's this combination. So that's another record I really love currently. My all-time favorite of my whole life is the band from Iceland, Sigur Rós. And so I'm always pulled in by them. As if every year goes by, that's the one band that I never let.
It's funny that we just this was like 6 years ago, but it just popped up in like my memories on social media. We got to interview Gangster Grass.
Huh.
They're a bluegrass hip hop band.
Oh,
it's great.
And it was like that up.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, it popped up in my memory and I'm like, oh, I've kind of forgotten about it. So I've been like listening to them in the car, and it is they were nominated for, I want to say, an Emmy, because one of their songs got picked for was the theme song to Justified on FX.
Cool.
But it's just this it is just a total, like, I love that stuff. You're like, I would never in a million years think to combine bluegrass and hip hop.
Yeah.
And it's, no, that's they great. Do a great job.
There's so much great music in every genre. That's like, and Mike and I are huge fans of music. So we're all over the, I remember growing up, I grew up in Indiana and I just hated country music because I think I thought that's what I was supposed to like. And I wasn't going to be a hick. You know, I was into heavy metal and then I evolved into punk. But I wanted it loud, hard, and fast. But now, yeah, I can't get enough like Buck Owens or Willie Nelson. There's great artists in, I would say, just about every, for me personally, genre of music.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think it was a product of at least the time I grew up in, is you listen to one thing.
Yes.
Like, I was a metalhead. And then Anthrax came around and you're like, I mean, okay, maybe I'll listen to a little bit of rap.
Yeah.
And then, like, as time progressed and really the walls broke down, you know, there's I never ask musicians how they classify their music because it's impossible to do. It's so much better, and it's really been like, oh no, I mean, I like Miley Cyrus. Miley Cyrus has some cool songs.
Yeah,
and I've been listening to a lot of Amy Winehouse lately, and it's like stuff as a kid I would never.
Yeah. Metal, you know. A lot of times I find metal people are the worst about judging their music. And I love, some of my best friends are just insane, you know, black metal fans and stuff. But yeah, there seems to be a protection. It's almost like a more of a club if you're metal. You know, you look at the logo that you can't read, and you're like, I know that man, type thing. Yeah, no, I'm just like you. I took my daughter to see Taylor Swift a couple years ago, and the first question I always got is like, geez, I guess the things you got to do as a parent. And I was like, oh, what are you talking about? It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life. So yeah, it's I don't judge anyone for their taste in music. I don't think you really should. Like I said, it's like any form of art. I can't tell what that music, you know, something might be the worst, like K-pop to me, that whole genre. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
It connects to some young people in a way that I can understand, because I worshipped Kiss when I was a kid. I read the liner notes. I had my bedroom had picture posters of Ace Frehley on the wall and stuff. And people couldn't understand that. So it's just no different. It's a different time and different age type of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's right back to that. We're not the demographic for K-pop. They're not singing to us.
No.
This fan did the Kiss disc. Didn't they just sell all the rights to their music? Did I just see that recently?
Kiss?
Yeah.
They're always selling something.
Yeah. But I was surprised.
They did do some kind of crazy. When I say crazy, I don't blame them, but some big publishing deal.
Yeah. You didn't try to get in on that?
Yeah, on Kiss?
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, I didn't want to buy their.
Oh, to bid on it?
Yeah.
We should have. I should have put in an offer.
Yeah.
No, they lost me when Ace and Peter Criss were out of the band. I have to admit, I'm one of those. I was like, no, no offense to any of those other guys, but I was an Ace Frehley fan, still am. So yeah,
he played here. Maybe like 4 or 5 months ago, played down at Plymouth Memorial Hall.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there are some local people giving them a little shade online because from the balcony, you could see that taped to the floor was just a sheet of paper that just said Plymouth across it. And I'm like, come on, man. I don't know where I was yesterday. I can't blame the guy.
Honestly. And no offense to Plymouth, but Plymouth isn't like, you know, it's not Boston. In other words, you don't, it's not a burg that you think of. I don't get that either when people were really knocking down Ozzy for having a telestrator so he could remember the words. It's like, well, you know what? We get up there in age and things happen to us.
Yeah.
Do you want to see Ozzy or not? If you don't want to see Ozzy singing from a teleprompter, then don't go see him now.
And it's just one of those, I think it takes the human aspect away from that person. Cause like how many times has anyone at any age, like walked into a room and been like, wait, what am I doing in here again? Why did I come in here? And like, how would you feel doing that in front of like a stadium full of people? So it's just like, you know, we all have those moments.
Yes, we do.
So what is Ipecac going to do for the 25th anniversary? Is there going to be like a,
I'll admit,
collaboration album or just
I'll admit a lot of things got floated and I shot them all down. I just am not a person, Mike isn't either, but the people that work here really wanted us to do like an album where bands from the label cover other bands' songs. That was a cool idea. The other one was just do a big concert, a show either in New York or in LA with a bunch of the bands, reform some of the ones that are no longer active. I don't know. I'm just not a self congratulating celebration type of guy.
Yeah.
I told our publicist, I go, look, I'll make myself available if anybody wants to talk to me for, you know, whatever reason, but that's about it. We're reissuing a lot of things on vinyl, but that's not just because it's our 25th year. That's because that's what people are screaming for.
Right.
That's a whole nother story in itself. It's like, wow, okay.
I've been very much, I think I've said it in like the past four episodes that I've interviewed musicians, I've been very hesitant about buying vinyl because I know who I am and I'm a lifelong comp book collector, vintage toy collector. I'm like, I move a lot. I don't need to have 900 records I need to move. And so it's just been,
I am right there with you.
Yeah.
About 23 years ago, I had a huge vinyl collection and I got rid of it all. I had just had a daughter and we were moving and priorities were different when you have a kid and they're big and so bulky. And then, you know, about 5 years ago, of course, as it would turn out, my daughter got into it, vinyl, and she pulled me back in. And now I'm collecting it. And it's the most dangerous thing. Yeah.
I am on the cusp and yeah. I feel like
fight it.
I'm going to try, but I know me and you know, we've interviewed enough people where they're like, oh, I'll send you a record. I'm like, shit, it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's worse when you used to be into it and then you got rid of, I had a huge collection and I had some ridiculously amazing stuff.
Cause then you want to go back and get those.
And now I'm like, my God, what did I do? Yeah.
I do the same because I was a big comic book guy. I owned a comic book store when I was married. And I look back at some of the stuff that, you know, I sold at cover price and I'm like, killing me, you know, like I remember I had the opportunity to get Walking Dead issue one for like $100 and I could have got it signed by Kirkman.
Yeah.
That day, and I was like, I don't feel like spending $100 on it. Now I'm like,
yeah,
what's wrong with me?
Brutal. I was the same way with I had comic books, not as many, but I had tons of action figures. You know, I had everything in the original Tick collection, figures, and Nightmare Before Christmas, and these things that are, and when I see now how much they're worth, I'm like, oh man. Oh, well, I still have my original Kiss dolls, though. So
yeah, nice.
I never got rid of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a Tick. I forgot about that. I met because that's a local that came out of New England Comics, which was like right up the street from where I grew up.
Yeah.
And I met Bob Polio. I think he did the lettering in the book or something like that. And he's so funny because he's like, I decided to make them blue. And you're like, okay.
You're in a good area, man, or I guess I should say a bad area if you're a vinyl addict. You've got some of the best record stores in the country out there.
Oh really?
Yeah, you got.
Why don't you go and tell me that, man?
Yeah. Oh man,
I kind of know what they are and I kind of don't at the same time. We just had one open up right down the street.
Well, you have a Newbury there in Plymouth, right?
Newbury Comics?
Yeah,
it's in Kingston, which is like right in the kind of, but it's not like it used to be.
Oh,
that particular one is at the mall.
Oh, so it's turned into a mall type
store? Yeah, so it's like pop vinyls and t-shirts and like the vinyl section is tiny.
Yeah,
but
oh, that's too bad.
I remember the Newbury Comics in Braintree. Used to be awesome. That was the one.
Yeah. They're great friends. The Newbury Comics people, they have done really well for us over the years.
I could definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Johnny Earl, Johnny Cupcakes came out of Newbury Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So went and saw him speak. He was great. So this, Greg, this was fantastic. Was very, you know, nostalgia and had a good time. I feel like kindred spirits. But
yes, absolutely. I would be part of your organization, it seems.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely would fit in. And if a CAC's gonna do anything, by all means, we would love to promote anything. We've had from Dead Cross, guitarist, I'm blanking on his name.
Mike Crane.
Yes, he was on, maybe they were just before they released their last album. We had him on the show.
Okay.
Cool. So yeah, by all means, feel free to reach out anytime you guys are promoting anything. We'd love to have you back. Where can our listeners go to check out Ipecac's releases? I'm assuming ipecac.com.
Yeah. Gosh, I guess I should be ready for those kind of questions. Yeah, I guess just www.ipecac.com.
Yeah.
Or just go to your local record store. I mean, that's the other thing that especially it's good timing too. A week from Saturday is record store day, and it's like, support independent record stores. You know, it's so easy to get everything in your life from Amazon, but the local stores deserve the love and attention, not just with records, you know, books and everything, art galleries.
Mm-hmm.
Support the locals.
Yeah, there's nothing better than going into that store that you can tell they found the cheapest retail space they can possibly find to make it work. And because you're going to find the best finds. The thing about, you know, Amazon and whatnot, you can find whatever you're looking for.
Yeah.
But it's the stuff that's looking for you that you can't find, that you just kind of, you're going through the thing and you're like, oh, look at this album cover. Oh, I didn't know this. And da, 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 you know, I didn't know this existed.
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff that you just miss out on.
It's so true.
Yeah. Cool. Mm. Awesome, Greg. Thank you so much. And again, congratulations. I know you're not going to congratulate yourself, but on 25 years, that's monumental, I think. And
it's nice. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, no problem. And let me know what else we can do. And listeners, we'll catch you guys again next week.
And thanks for checking out the show today, listeners. If you enjoyed the content today, you can go over to patreon.com/inebriart to support the show. You can join over there for just a few dollars a month and help us provide this fun content that you just checked out. You can also email us at inebriart.com with your questions, complaints, and concerns, or you can find us on all social medias at inebriart or at inebriart6 on Instagram. And also don't forget to check out our other shows, Bar Talk Podcast, Old Colony Cast, InebriArt, and all the other shows on the InebriArt Network, which you can find at inebriart.com. Thanks again for listening.